Mr. Cordon, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Cordon?
Well, I was born at Rotherham, South Yorkshire, in a village called Cliver, 29th of June, 1918.
And what did your father do for a living?
Well, he worked at the Connery Tire Distilling Plant, which at the Colcombe side of it. The Tire Distillery, which was a lot up and down there, Colcombe is now, I don't know what it is in now, but there used to be then a lot up and down the country. But he worked there, in the Tire Distillery, all his life.
And
he travelled the country once or twice. He went down south, just after he married, came back. But anyway, that's what he did all his life.
And how many were there in the family?
There was 10 of us, 2 girls, 4 and 8 boys. I was a middle lad. There's one still living, older than me, and the rest are younger than me. And one older than me, he'll be 82 this year.
Could you tell us a bit about your childhood, just to give a bit of an idea of what it was like?
Yes, being a big family, mostly lads, we all had jobs to do, all of us. The only ones that missed the job was the youngest girl. When she was given a job, she used to run out to my auntie's. She's living next door but one. But otherwise, happy life. We played together. We played games together, which they don't do nowadays. And we entertained ourselves at home, outside. And when Father had a chance, he was playing games with us. Mother never had a chance to play games with us. Obviously, much to do, but Father always play games with us.
Was he in... You were reasonably well off then for the time?
No, he wasn't. But you understand, I don't know. In fact, today, I don't know how my mother brought us up. We wasn't on this last up or anything like that. We were kept tidy. We went to church 3 or 4 times on a Sunday, and mother was in the union. 3 or 4 of my brothers were in the choir. I was in the choir one day after doing 6 months choir practicing. It was Sunday holiday time. The choir master says, come in on Sunday, dress ready for going to the choir. I was in. I don't know whether it was my song or what it was, or my singing, but he says, I shouldn't bother coming to any more choir practices, Sam. You'll never be able to sing. Well, that made my daughters laugh. I've told them since. They know, because we used to driving, going to the seaside, always singing, but Father couldn't sing.
What about your education? Which school did you go to?
I went to the same school all through till I was 14. That was Thriber Secondary Modern School, it was eventually called. But it was Thriber Infants and Seniors then, when I was there. And I started at school at 3, and one thing I remember quite vividly is in the afternoon, every afternoon, for half an hour, or probably more, the blinds were put down the windows, and we all had to put our head in our arms and go to sleep. Every afternoon, remember that vividly. Well, now those are called nursery schools, aren't they? But we went to school at 3. And I left at 14.
How did you do at school? You liked or didn't like?
No, I enjoyed school. In fact, I had a book given to me, Captain Nat's Treasure was the name of the book. I forget what the author was now. That was given to me by one of our best teachers. I was with him 3 different occasions during the last few years of my school life. For not staying away all the time I was in the top school. Which I was in 5 years in the top school. Anyway, I left at 14. I was in the top class 2 years. I failed the 11 plus. Well, it wasn't 11 plus then. It was matriculation, wasn't it? Oh, it was 11 plus then. Sorry. 11 plus then, called matriculation for the grammar school. I failed that for one reason only. I had blood poison in 3 different parts of my body at the time. Two fingers on one and one finger on the other. And I got the old red line up of the arm and lump on your arms. And of course you couldn't avoid it, you couldn't ever reach it then. So anyway, I was told later on in life, with the lady who was the overseer, she was a wife of one of the workmen I was with later on, and she told me all about it. and I knew I'd score at church, you see. She said, I can't understand why you made those silly mistakes. That's what she told me once later on in life. I said, well, if you'd have felt like I felt, Mrs. Barker, I didn't feel like doing anything at all that day. It was Saturday morning, went back to school Saturday morning for the circulation exam. Well, that was that, and then...
Were you a member of any of the boys' organisations?
Yes, I mean, there's Cubs and Boy Scouts.
And what sort of activities did you do with them?
Well, I went to camp about 5 miles up the road, which that's all the scouts could afford it that day. A farmer let us go in his field, and we took the old check cart in them days. No, you had to carry everything yourself, 2 wheels and 4 lads pulling, and all the rest of the scouts pushing, because we were uphill from where we lived to go to this particular place. Anyway, we had a week there, and the Saturday we were coming home, it was really downpour, not fit to even walk back. So the scoutmaster got a friend who got a lorry and fetched all the gear back in this lorry, and we came back on the bus. It was about 5 miles or so. But I mean, we were away from home, and we did everything. There was a stream running through this farmer's field, and it wasn't wide enough to swim, so we asked him if we could dam it up, so we dammed it up, made a pool, and you know, to swim. But I mean, that's how we lived in those days. You help yourself and for yourself. Yeah. I thought I enjoyed the part of the scout.
Was it? It's all military in any way. Did they do drill or anything?
Well, we had a band. We had our own scout band. I mean, all scouts had their own band in them those days, because there were lots of scouts. I mean, there was the band of hope at the church, which brought you together, brought all the younger people together. And we always marched on the summer that day, on the First World War, always marched with the Colliery Brass Band and the church, choir and everything, all marched to the cenotaph. And all round the houses on Monday, which now is not when Monday's Spring Bank Holiday, we always walked in and out the streets, stopping at every street end or every other street end, singing a few songs, going around with the collecting boxes, and finished up back at the church, and then into the playing fields for games and sports, back into the church hall for tea. That's how we enjoyed our life.
But that was the only military side that...
The only military side I had until I was called up.
Any other organisations you were in?
Well, not really, because when I was school at 14, there was depression. There was no work. I was 9 months before I got a job, actually.
So that'd be 1932?
1932, yes. And so I went back to school, evening school, and it was free because there were no... The school was at. And I did a year in the mining course, of course, at our own school, because they had evening classes, different things, woodwork and things like that. And I did 1 year that. Then I passed that.
What exactly were you learning?
All safety lamp was the first object. The safety lamp in mines, and all our things, what things went up in the pits, and our things went up. Enough to keep us interested in to look there for jobs. Well, I passed that, and which gave me a free entrance to the technical college. Well, not working, I didn't know what I was going to do. Couldn't get in the shop anywhere, so my brother was an electrician, and he was going to the school, night school, at the same for the technical college, so I went on the same course as him. In the same class as him, actually. So I thought it was electrical engineering. Well, I passed that course, and in between me going to that course, I got a job at the pit.
Which pit?
Silverwood Cottery.
Silverwood?
Silverwood Cottery, yes. Thriver. Near Rotherham.
So what did you get in there as first? What were you doing first?
The first job, see, my father belonged to the Buffs, R-A-O-B, the Buffs called, and the manager at the Cottery was in the same book lodge as my father. And my father must have been telling him one day that we were struggling, my mother was struggling at home because I wasn't working. No, we got no money on the door in them days, as you know. And he said, "Oh," he says, "I think I've got a vacancy coming at my house." Because he had a servant provided by his own family, his wife. Then he had a chauffeur from the colliery and a gardener plus a washing up boy in the house from the colliery as well. This one was due to leave. And stranger said, the one that was leaving was the lad I'd been at school with. But he was looking at the job. Another lad I was at school with, he got the new garage pump lad. But I failed, me and another two more lads, all going together. But anyway, I had to report to the engineer at the pit. And he gave me a letter to give this engineer. He gave me another letter to give this engineer. So the manager wasn't interested in what happened at the pit. Just that he was going to sign me on to work at his house. So I worked at his house as a cook and bottle washer. All the time I was there. The maid didn't do any washing up at all. See, we did it all, the lad did it all in the kitchen. Run errands, help the gardener when there's nothing in the house. First job in the morning we got there was fetch the milk. Because you remember this, you've gone back from the camp, the farm. Well, I passed the farm, so I brought the milk with me, so I didn't have to go back out again. Anyway, the first job was clean all the shoes and boots that were in, because they were all piled up in the corner, the three in the family. And all the boots were there, and there's a great big tabletop, you lift it up, and all inside, all those square boot racks for all the shoes and boots. And they all got their own one, we knew which one were which. Cleaned all those, that was the first job, cleaned all those, get them in out of the way, because you're walking on the rice. Then clear all the pots that accumulated overnight and breakfast. And then anything, if the maid wanted any big jobs doing, he did that. If the manager's wife wanted anything, most thing was going down shopping for her, you see. And strange to say, I was fortunate because the father and the manager were friends, and eventually my mother and his manager's wife got made friends. And it didn't put anything on me. I mean, I was just worked as I worked at home. Did what I was told and everything. And then anyway, the one period, the nurse, the maid left. And in between another maid come in. The lady in the house could manage during the week, but at weekend when she got the family, most family got home, she wanted some help. So I used to go in on a Sunday morning for 2 hours. Clear up all the rubbish what had been left from Saturday and leave everything nice, pick and span up so that she could carry on when she got up and rest the day. And she paid me out of her purse for that. But she told me straight, I hadn't got to give my mother. That was to go in my bank. She said, that's a starter bank for you. And that started my bank account, which eventually I got married on later in life. So I left it in the bank, I put it in. My mother didn't ask for it because she'd been told. And she gave me half a crown, which was 6 months, whatever it is, for myself. She says, you can spend it if you want, when you want it, if it's desperate. But she says, you'll put it in bank. Well, I don't think I drew much at all about it till I got married. Anyway.
How long were you doing this?
I was there till I was 15. Sorry, 15 and a half. So I would be there 12 months. At least 12 months, more than 12 months, 15 and a half. Oh, but more. I was 14 when I left school, 9 months before I got a job, be 16 when I left. Yeah. Of course, couldn't allow you to work there after 16, that's right. So eventually, he says, now what do you want to do? He placed me into the garden, he was studying garden with the manager. He says, now what are you going to do? You're due to go back up to the colliery next week. He says, what do you want to do? Well, I says, I would like to go electrical engineering. I said, I'm going to send you to school for electrical engineering at the moment. Well, he says, as far as I know, there's no electrical engineers, any apprentices vacant. The only thing that I can tell you at the moment that's vacant is down the pit. Well, I didn't want to go down the pit.
Why not?
Well, I knew what the pit was like, and And one of my older brothers had been down to the pit and said how rough it was, and he'd come out of the pit and gone painting. But anyway, he said, I'll see what I can do. So I'll see you tomorrow. So he saw me the next day and he got me a job in the pitting shop. And that's when my engineering life started.
Now, what was the fitting shop? What exactly did that do in the pit?
Well, in those days, the pits were self-contained. They were self-maintained in nearly every shape or form. Whatever you wanted, the pit was done at the pit, made at the pit. The only thing that came from outside was specialist work, such as turbines. If we opened a turbine or something like that, we had to have a specialist there. But anything with blacksmiths there, with boilersmiths there, with everything there at Silverwood, with 20 boilers, Lancashire boilers. I mean, everything was run on steam. We had our own generators. Only electrical generators from in the power grid were coupled in at weekend when the pit was shut down. But we produced our own electricity then, and of course there's quite a number of workmen in the shop. I mean, the colliery employed 3,000 people at that time, and when that colliery shut down, 200 people, that's what we employed there, between 200 and 300 people.
So you were in the fitting shop, and that made...
That was the start of my mechanical engineering.
And what were you doing? What did you start?
As an apprentice. The first job, you're tea making. Well, you do it, obviously, you're making tea, that's number one.
Were you a proper apprentice? I mean, did you have...
We didn't have papers, but we were considered apprentices. I don't think we had official papers, but we were considered apprentices then. I mean, in some works, you had to have the written papers and everything, if I remember right. But we had no written papers. We were just considered apprentices. So we started team mashing, and team mashing wasn't in the kettle with electric plug. The fireplace was equally 2 foot square. You could put a barrel full of coal on, then fill it with another one. The simple reason that was used for other things than making tea, of course. Warming the place, no central heating. Warming the place, it was very warm when you sat down for your break, because you sat all around the fire. And the teapot, the kettle, was a piece of pipe, 6 inches across, 12 inches deep, welded steel handle, welded on, great long steel handle, about three or four foot long, so you could get away from the fact it was a big fire. And that was plugged up by water. And it was knocked out with the blacksmith to put a spout on it, and he filled up. And the cups were all lined up on the seat, and each man put his own tea in, and he opened the water. And that had to be done when the buzzer went. In our case, it was 10 o'clock. Our breakfast time was 10 o'clock. The rest of the colliery, the man who works at dealing with coal, was 9 o'clock. But ours was 10 o'clock, because we weren't considered short-time workers like the colliery workers that were dealing with coal. We worked from 10 till 20 minutes to 3. All the rest of the coal workers, all the tradesmen I'm talking about, worked 10 minutes to 3. The other workers changed their shifts at 2 o'clock, but we were only all-day workers, so we had to work a bit longer. Anyway, from there, we started off with those machines, in quite a number of machines, if you understand what the machines are, drill machines, lathes, shapers, turners, planers and all that, just like wood workers, but steel. Started on the small drill. And from there, you went to a medium size drill, which took drills short up to 1 inch from, say, half an inch to 1 inch. And then the big machine, which took any size drill other than the really small ones. And it was a really powerful big drill, which it went up and down, swung round in a full 36 degree circle. That was the last drill you went on. When you passed on that and had your time on that, you went on to the small lathe. From that lathe, you went on to a medium-sized lathe. All these were in this big workshop. Went on a medium-sized lathe. From the medium-sized lathe, you went on to a big lathe when the big lathe operators weren't there, because there was two operators on that big lathe full-time, one in afternoons, one in days. And you only went on there if they were off, because they were specialists. I mean, a massive thing used for in that lathe. Apart from that, then, when you'd done the lathe work, you went on the shaper machine, which the small shaper machine again, a little small shaper, and then the great big shaving machine, which had a table, a moving table, about 3 foot wide and about 8 foot long, and that went back to the old table. You could put a great big thing on to shape. Or
what do you mean by shaping machine?
Cutting down to size. Like you could cutting keyways and shafts. You know, there's a key in a shaft, a key's a wheel onto a shaft. Well, there's keyways in shafts, keys all sorts of things, apart from wheels, key lots of things on. And all those slots have to be done with these shapers. Or, if you want to make a round thing into a square in a certain part of the shaft, if you're going to put a square on a shaft, you put the shaft opposite way on, and did one side square, then turn it both 180 degrees to the other side, and back another one. And that's the shaper, small or large.
What else were you doing in the
right? When that was done, when you'd done your apprentice on the machines, then you could go out with the fitters on repair jobs. And that was repaired anything that might happen anywhere on the surface. Anywhere on the surface from the shop, you could go out with any of the fitters, locals. There were numerous locals. There was a local shed. We had two full-time local fitters. If they wanted to help, say they were taking a boiler out for the boilersmith to put a new firebox in. That's what we used to do. We'd take the boiler out to the local, deliver it to the boiler shop, which was the next door, and they took the firebox out, which was held in place by copper rivets, hundreds of copper rivets. These fireboxes are suspended inside the boiler, but the other boilers fixed up on local, on steam local. And those rivets were taken out, not all at once, so many, and there was new ones made in our shop, and then the boilersmiths fitted those in. So many at a time, and did all the lot. And a complete overhaul of a local. Every part, and while they were doing that, these other fitters were putting new brasses in. Was in the shop, were probably remetalling, because most of them got white metal in, besides the resin in the brass. Because white metal is a better resistance for friction than brass. And they were melted out on this fire, the big steel plate put on, the brass were thrown on, and it was tilted. There was a big pot at the bottom catching all the white metal coming out. That was put on one side, eventually used again, you see. And then that fire was used for remetalling, for hotting the metal up to put back in, which he made jigs properly made for these bearings, and they were all smaller in bore than what's required, and they were put on the machine on the lathe to be bored out. See, all that was done at the colliery. Most of the colliery, definitely down colliery, right from start to finish, you could do a complete local. That's without any outside help at all. That was all done at the colliery. The brasses were changed, the big end pins, the bows were ground in, all that, all done.
So you'd go out with the fitter as his assistant at that stage?
At the start, you went out with the fitter's assistant on any job. Winding engines were done at weekend. I mean, the powerhouse work was done at weekend. Some jobs could be done in a week while the machines were working, but the major overhauls, the major repairs, to a powerhouse and the wind engines and the fan engines and all that until that weekend when they pushed them down, you see. Take, for instance, the wind engine. The wind engine, they were big engines, ours, and they were made by Markham's of Chesterfield. You could stand up inside the cylinders, so you can see how big they were. A big drum, winding drum as well, but you can see how big the engine were. I don't know whether you've been and seen this engine at Wigan Pier. There's one there, and that's the big one, but that was bigger than that. But anyway, that was all, that took, luckily, it took 5 years. It was 5 years before I went in the army working on all that.
And did you actually qualify as anything? I mean, did you finish?
Well, I'll come back on to that. Now, going through all that, I started going to Texas, as I told you. I did the first year at our old school was mining. The first year at the technical school as electrical engineering. And then I went on to engineering, drawing and design. I got three certificates on that. And the last one was my national certificate. I've got other certificates somewhere around. There might be my papers here somewhere.
So you'd qualified before the war started?
Yes, I qualified as an engineer, not totally qualified till after the war, because you wanted your national certificate and your high national certificate, see, to qualify as an engineer in those days. Either that or sitting guilds, which was a different routine eventually. Still engineering, the high national certificate was engineering design.
So would you be known as a fitter by?
I was known as a fitter by the time I went in army, but not fully because I wasn't 21. You weren't fitted till you're 21.
Now, so this character, this is what you were doing until the war broke out. Were you aware of what was going on in Germany? Were you aware of Hitler?
Yes, 1938. I remember 1938-39 because in 1938 that's when they started the trouble started in Germany, and that's when the British government decided there's something about it, about them in a reserve defence, didn't they? Reserve or building the forces up. And that's when they decided to start the militia. And the militia started in 1939, early 1939, for 6 months. You'll pick that up in your doing, won't you? And I was called up on May the 15th to be examined, 1939, May the 15th, and I went to be examined at the Somme Barracks at Sheffield. And I wanted to be in the Navy.
Now, why was that?
Well, because the previous years, my brother got in the Navy. I mean, 1937 he went to the Navy, younger brother than me. He started in the fitting shop after me, but he didn't like it. He didn't like the work of the colony at all. Well, he came in the house and told his mum and dad he'd joined the Navy. He'd been to Sheffield on his own job in the Navy. So I thought, well, he came home and, you know, all the Navy's life. So, you know, he gets all these tall stories. And I thought, if I've got to go in forces, I'll go in the Navy. That was before the actual war started. I mean, war was imminent probably for politicians, but not for us then, because the, what we call it, the man's in the... He was putting it all down, weren't he? With his white paper, he fell to pieces, though, didn't it?
Now, in your notes, you've got it was June 15th. Would that be right, rather than May 15th?
Yeah, that's right.
So, what happened at the examination? Did you remember?
Yes, I do. As usual, we're all lined up, went in... going that bay, there were about six bays in the barracks. The Somme barracks from the previous war, of course. And I went through the examination, and then you had to go to the rooms for an interview. Well, there was Naval, Air Force, and there was on the wall, the badges on the wall. They told me to go into Army badges. So I said, oh, what do we do? I want to go to Naval. Oh, no, he said, on your papers, you're Army. He said, I knew that. I knew it said Army on my papers. I said, but I don't want to go to Navy. I said, I put down for Navy when I got the first papers. Because he asked you at first what you wanted to go in. Oh no, you got to go through there, so that's all right. So I went. Entered for the, you wanted to know all your experience. So they said, get me with my trade. They gave me with this trade. That's all right then. So I came out, and I was on June the 15th. I said, we'll get your papers shortly. 2 days later, I'm on my foot at work. So that put in that on June the 28th. I didn't get there on June the 28th.
How did you break your foot?
Well, in the fitting shop, I know that I was sawing something off or somebody else was sawing something off. But I was at the saw, steel saw, which was, you know, great big one, like a little light saw, but bigger. And they were sawing the girder off, because the girder dropped on my foot. I don't know whether I was passing or whether I was stood there, but anyway, it dropped on my foot. And because I finished in hospital for the rest of the day, went home the next day with crutches. Well, practice in those days didn't deal up like they do now. I plastered on 11 weeks. 11 weeks. I mean, nowadays, the back kicking football about in less than that, aren't they? Anyway, end of August, the plaster came off and the doctor clear me for work, and also clear me for army. Within 2 or 3 weeks, I had papers to go again to some barracks at Sheffield to be examined again, all over again. Oh yes, your foot's all right, you're all right, you're fit. That's not you're all right. I eventually got my papers on 15th, report on the 15th of November. And that's when the story starts.